Have you ever taken a personality assessment? Most coaches or psychologists or therapists or even counselors are taught to use some form of a personality assessment, and it helps to say what type of person someone is. And when someone gets the results, they're excited to learn all about themselves and how they can create a great life based on their personality. These assessments are able to tell you who you are and how you behave in all types of situations. You're really able to define yourself and understand why you do what you do. This is your personality, and it doesn't change. Or does it? In this episode, our guest, our special guest, Dr. Benjamin Hardy, organizational psychologist and best-selling author, discusses his new book, Personality Isn't Permanent. In this book, he debunks the myths of personality, all these things that we coaches and therapists and counselors have been taught, you know, how we're supposed to coach and guide people. And he teaches us in this book a new approach to life. So we're going to talk about this with him today and how you can achieve success and not be stuck in a predetermined lifestyle. But before we do, welcome to another exciting episode of Let's Coach with Carolyn. Good afternoon, morning, or evening, wherever you may be or whenever you're listening to this episode. I'm your host, Carolyn Owens. Let's Coach is the show that brings the best from the coaching world with tips and strategies for you to use in your everyday life. And we bring you great small business ideas and some good news stories and stories about people paying it forward in their everyday lives. Now, when I'm not hosting the show, I serve as a coach, an organizational trainer, blogger, and as you know, podcast host. So you can find more about me by going to CarolynOwens360.com. You can, on there, you're going to find a link to my website, my social media links, everything you need to connect with me, you're going to find right there at CarolynOwens360.com. Now, if you listened to our last show, we talked about coaching. We talked about professional coaching, what professional coaching is, to educate you so when you're seeking to work with a coach or if you're currently working with a coach, what you should expect and what the experience should be like. And you can find the recording of the show. We're on all the major platforms right now. We're on iTunes, iHeartRadio, I still say iTunes, Apple Podcast. We're on iHeartRadio. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, just go and search for Let's Coach with Carolyn. And I encourage you to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. We have a lot of upcoming exciting shows planned all throughout the next couple of months. So, and we're doing sometimes 3 shows a week, 4 shows a week. So definitely don't want to miss it. And remember, if you can't listen live, you can always come back and listen to the recording, search the old shows and find and check out some of the older ones while you're there, whatever topic or subject you're looking for. So for that last show, if you want to find it, it's just look for what is professional coaching? And it may answer some of your questions. But as you know, if you have additional questions, you can always reach out to me, or I can, if you're looking for a particular coach other than myself, I can connect you with a colleague or someone who specializes in the area that you're looking for. So just shoot me an email at cowens@infinitycoaching.net. But also on that show, that last show, as we were wrapping up, you heard me mention that we were going to be interviewing Sarah Wirth, and she's the author of The Coaching Effect. So we did have a scheduling conflict, and Sarah will now be interviewed on May 21st at 11 a.m. You know, that's the thing. You guys know I don't edit my shows. I, you know, give it exactly as it is. And so you heard me mention that, and we did not get a chance to air it when we were supposed to. But I want to let you know that interview will take place May 21st at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So be on the lookout for that episode. It's going to be another great one. And we have, like I said, we got so many great guests lined up, and I'm excited for what's to come. But now, on with today's show. Our special guest, Dr. Benjamin Hardy, is an organizational psychologist and best-selling author of Willpower Doesn't Work. His blogs have been read by over 100 million people. I think I need to say that again. By over 100 million people, and are featured on Forbes, Fortune, CNBC, Cheddar, Big Think, and many other platforms. He's a regular contributor to Inc. and Psychology Today, and from 2015 to 2018, he was the number one writer in the world on Medium.com. So I believe he's here with us, and I'm going to bring him on the show here.
How's it going?
Hi, Dr. Hardy.
Yep, happy to be with you.
Welcome to the show. Thank you.
Yeah,
so
my pleasure.
You have a very strong viewpoint about personality assessments, and your wife almost didn't marry you because of them. Can you share that story with us?
It's a true story. And yeah, so when I was when we were in college, we were both undergrads in psychology. First time I saw her, I thought she was amazing and just gorgeous, wanted to date her. And there was a big personality test at the time called the Color Code, still around. And it was a test that she liked, and also her family actually really took the test seriously. And the test breaks people up into four categories, and they're like colors, you know. So like reds are type A, power-driven people. Blues are relationship-based, whites are like passive dreamers, and then yellows are kind of your life of the party extroverts. Well, Lauren's kind of, they come from kind of a red family, you could say, where they're all kind of like strong personalities, like kind of very driven. And Lauren would consider herself, or at least the test at the time gave her the score of a red. And one thing that's super important to understand is Lauren actually was married before she got married to me. She was in a super abusive marriage for like 3 years. And the guy mm-hmm. she was married to was also a red, you know, and like in a really abusive relationship like that, her personality like basically plummeted to nothing. And what she ended up doing is she ended up traveling for a year or two. She served a church mission. And so she was out of that relationship for a few years. And I was the first person that she dated seriously after that divorce. And when her parents found out that I was a white on that test, they were like, uh-oh, I see what Lauren's up to. Because, like, she's a red, and she didn't want to let, you know, in the former relationship she was in, she, like, was super, like, I guess you could say manipulated, like, overpowered. And so they're like, okay, so she's dating this white because passive, she can control the situation. She's not going to repeat. But they're, like, big on, like, you know, you should marry someone who's, obviously like a good partner, but someone who's powerful, like, you know, you should marry someone who's like going somewhere with their life, not just some dreamer. So they were like, you really need to like marry someone serious, not just some white.
But fast forward.
Yeah. Well, obviously we did get married, you know, we have five kids together now, and like, I've got a PhD in psychology. She's, you know, basically done 6 years of psychology research herself, you know, did a master's in social work. We ended up actually adopting kids from the foster system. And then a month after the adoption, we ended up actually getting pregnant with twins, which was pretty amazing. But yeah, it's quite hilarious, actually. We've actually been asked by people who have heard this story to retake the test. And obviously neither of us got the same score as we were before. Yeah, that's actually one of the reasons not to take the test as seriously, but yeah, I mean, the truth is we almost didn't get married because of that ridiculous situation.
That's like a real true life example of the next question I'm going to ask you is, why are these personality tests like the Myers-Briggs, DISC, and the Enneagram like unscientific and so harmful for people?
Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised, actually. So I've got my PhD in organizational psychology. You know, organizational mm-hmm. psychologists, they, it's like the workforce, you know, like we're experts on like hiring, training, culture, leadership. Obviously, hiring is a big aspect. But also, like, when you're a scientist, and, like, I don't know if I'd actually call myself a scientist, even though I've been studied in it, but I've learned how it works. You know, part of science is measuring things, and you're only as good as the tools you're using, you know, and so, like, the tools that you build have to be valid and reliable. Like, valid meaning you're actually studying what you say you're studying, reliable meaning you can get consistent results. And all my professors over and over and over would talk about how tests like Myers-Briggs and such, which are the really the popular trendy ones in culture and even in business, are like, they're just bad science. They're not, they wouldn't even actually be categorized as science. They're basically just, like, I would throw them in the category of horoscopes. They're just kind of, they are what they are, but personality isn't actually viewed that way. Like, it's not something you just categorize and you're just one person in every situation. But, like, what these tests do is they give you a score, which then kind of, if you take it seriously, it becomes a part of your identity, you know. So like whatever your score is on that test, like me for an example, I could take that test seriously and I could say, well, I'm a white, you know, and then that would, and your identity is really based on how you describe yourself, and your identity or your self-concept in a lot of ways directs your behavior, you know. So if I view myself as a white, then I'm going to probably act like one. And your behavior over time becomes your personality. So your identity mm-hmm. and your personality are two different things. Your identity is your – and by the way, identity is so much more important, in my opinion. How you define and describe yourself and the story you tell about yourself really matters a lot. And, you know, you hear people who have often very limiting narrations of themselves. You know, I'm not very good with people. Mm-hmm. I'm not creative. I'm X. You know, like defining yourself so definitively is really bad for identity for a lot of reasons. One of them being that it's just not always true. You're never always the exact same in every situation. You're never always an introvert, as an example. You know, so like one reason it's not true, but the second thing is when something's a part of your identity, you actually seek to confirm it. It's like confirmation bias. You seek to make sure it's true and prove it's true, and also you seek to defend it. And so like you're not going to actually try to change it. You're going to actually try to keep confirming it. And so what it really does is it creates a fixed mindset where you then think your future self is going to be the same person you are today. And that's the opposite of what you would want to do if you're wanting to grow. It's actually also just inaccurate. Your future self is going to be different than who you are today, just like you're not the same person you were 10 years ago.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, most people will think that your personality is this fixed, you know, thing that can't be changed, that this is who you are, this is who you're going to be. Is your personality actually fixed and unchangeable?
No, absolutely not. I mean, there's what's called longitudinal research on this. So basically longitudinal research means it's studied over time. Most research is not longitudinal. Most research, you know, You know, there's a bunch of data that looks at people in one snapshot of time, but longitudinal means that the same group of people were studied over an extended period of time. And basically, you know, cat out of the bag, like none of the people had the same personality they had 10, 20, 30 years ago, you know, on very high quality dimensions. I mean, you can actually, like, there's valid measures on, like, confidence, creativity, you know, people skills. Like, there's good ways to measure people. Personality tests like Myers and Briggs are a horrible and non-predictive way to look at people. But yeah, there's actually a really good TED Talk for anyone who's listening that interested in more. It's only 6 minutes long, but it's called The Psychology of Your Future Self. It's by a Harvard psychologist named Daniel Gilbert. And one of the things that he's done is he asks people, do you think you're the same person you were 10 years ago? I'd ask you
no.
that. Do you think you're the exact same person you are 10 years ago?
No, definitely not.
You know what's so funny is like everyone says that. Everyone says that they're not the same person they were 10 years ago. But one of the things that Dr. Gilbert has found is that even when people think that they're not the same person they were before, they underplay the potential change that's going to happen in the future. He actually has a good statement. He says, human beings are works in progress that mistakenly think they're finished. One of the reasons we think we're finished is because of how we describe ourselves. Another reason we think we're finished or that we think we are who we are is because of our environment. You know, we're often the same person we've been because we're in the same situations around the same people. So there's reasons why people are predictable, but it's not because their personality can't change.
And so you mentioned predictable. Would you, because a lot of times people are saying that the past, you hear this quote over and over again, that the past is the greatest prediction of the future. And you think about that. I mean, do you agree with that?
It actually can be true, yeah. I mean, you don't want that to be true if you're someone who wants to change. There's a reason why
mm-hmm.
that's true. And it's not that people can't change. It's one of, you know, there's multiple reasons why people get caught in repetitive cycles. One of them being that they are in the same roles and environments that they're in. One of them being that their identity narrative stays the same, so they keep explaining themselves the same way. They're not trying new things. Unresolved trauma, honestly, from the past is one of the reasons why people get stuck in repetitive loops as well. Like they, when you, one good way of looking at personality, honestly, is that it's your comfort zone. Personality and comfort zone can be viewed the same way. Doing anything outside your comfort zone would be to do something, you know, that's not typical to how you typically do things. And when you have unresolved kind of painful emotions from your past, what you do is you actually build a wall around your comfort zone and try to do anything and everything you can to not step outside of it. So what it does is it leads you to being basically emotionally rigid. And when you're trying new things, stepping outside your comfort zone, maybe working towards a goal, you have to face uncertainty. In psychology, we call it psychological flexibility. You've got to learn to be flexible and handle your emotions. And as people age, often they stop seeking new experiences, stop pursuing, you know, stop putting themselves in uncertain situations. And so they become predictable because they stay in certain spaces and they stop learning as much. Not because they can't, but because they're emotionally a little more rigid than they need to be.
And I think you see that so much as people age. I've talked to people once. I remember somebody made a statement when they turned 50 that they said it's all downhill from here, that, you know, they weren't seeking new experiences or, you know, you think there's a lot of societal myths around our personality, especially when it comes to aging. What are some of these destructive myths around personality?
Yeah, I love that you brought up aging, by the way, because I know people in their 70s, 80s, and 90s who are just transforming so much, growing so much. I mean, I'll just point to one friend of mine. His name's Dan Sullivan. He's considered the number one entrepreneurial coach in the world. He's 75 years old. He's a collaborator and friend of mine, and he's always growing and changing. He's always doing new things, and it allows him to build his confidence. You know, I mean, he doesn't get stuck. Like, one of the things he tries to do is he's always trying to be surprised. You know, like he'll test new ideas on his audiences, and he's always shocked at what comes back. And like, you know, like being surprised is a really good experience. And I think, you know, if your ego is in the way, or if, you know, you're just not trying new things, then you stop being surprised so much by life, and your worldview kind of becomes increasingly narrowed. But, yeah, some of the big myths of personality that are just, none of them are backed by science, but they're just kind of pop culture way of seeing things is, one is that it's innate and that it's unchangeable, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Two is that it comes from your past. It can only be understood by looking at the past. So if you want to understand yourself, you've got to look to the past, you know, the idea that your former, you know, behaviors and stuff will predict who you are. That doesn't have to be true. Absolutely not. Also, it's something you have to discover. You know, that's why you would discover it in the past, and is because you have to discover your true self. And once you've discovered who you truly are, then you can finally build a life around your personality. You know, you can meet that perfect soulmate who perfectly fits you. You can find that perfect job that just fits your perfect strengths. And once you really discover yourself, then you can finally live the life you were supposed to live. And that's just a total bullcrap way of living. no offense, but like that's not how personality works, and that's like the definition of what Carol Dweck would call a fixed mindset. Interestingly, though, we're seeing this more and more in society. You know, like, so I'm a millennial, but like you're seeing this more and more, where like, you know, like there's a lot to be said about like a lot of the high school kids these days, and there's a lot written to this. That a lot of high schoolers no longer want to be required to do in-class oral presentations because it doesn't match their authentic personality. You know, like they're just, you know, it's against who they are, and they shouldn't be required to do something that would be difficult or potentially embarrassing. And their teachers are in many ways catering to them and trying to build education systems around the people's preferences or comfort zones. And obviously that's the opposite of how you build mental and emotional flexibility. It's the opposite of how you build confidence. Mm. But we're kind of seeing this more and more today.
Yeah, it's funny because my son in high school, he had to give presentations, and I'm like, you're going to do these. Because I said, you have to step outside and you got to do it, because if you don't, this is a safe environment, you'll get used to it, do it, because you're going to be required to do this, you know, whatever career path you choose, you're going to be in front of people, you're going to have to communicate. And so I did not definitely let him out of it, but he hated every bit of it. But I do see that there's this whole concept of, you know, you get to take, as I would say, timeouts now. As adults, even at work, I need a timeout, and you're allowed to go do it, but you're not allowed to enforce the standards and rules that are needed to get the job done, because someone's able to, you know, say timeout every so often, and it kind of stagnates us, our growth as organization, community. It stagnates the whole process, life.
It really does. And there's nothing wrong with your son not enjoying it the first time. You know, like, just as an example, you know, we have two 17-month-old twins now. We live down here in Florida. Really hot all year. Everyone has swimming pools. Most people have swimming pools. We have a swimming pool. So, like, it's important. Like, a lot of people have their, like, kids, even under age 1 year old, learn swimming here so that you don't find your child, like, out in the pool, you know? And so, like, we're putting our little girls through swimming lessons, and obviously they don't love it. You know, like, they're like babies and they're learning how to swim, and it's, you know, painful. I mean, they're crying, screaming and stuff like that, but they're getting better and better and better. And obviously at some point in the future, they're going to love swimming, you know? So just because you hate something the first time doesn't mean you can't learn to passionately love it. And actually, there's a really good book, by a guy named Cal Newport. He said it, you know, he wrote a book called Be So Good They Can't Ignore You. But he really, in that book, dispels the myth of passion and talks about how passion isn't something you discover. It's something that comes after you've created competency and after you've built skill. Like, once you get good at something, then you can become passionate about it. And, you know, as for myself, like, writing this book and these books, I mean, even though I'm considered a professional writer, my writing, like, is successful. It's not easy. Like, writing this book, I had to push the publication date back twice. In many instances, I was about to give up, throw in the towel. Like, it was so hard to attempt what I attempted. And that's how you build confidence. Like, it's not supposed to be easy or fun all the time, or, like, there, you know, it's not like you're pursuing your natural strengths and everything's easy. It's actually, like, pursue what's meaningful and important to you, and you go through the process of learning, which is not ever easy.
It's funny you use the example of swimming, because I did the same thing. My son was learning to swim before he could walk, and he hated it, and he cried. But he ended up on a swim team in middle school, and he was a bigger kid. But when he got in that pool, for even at high school, they had to do a swim test. I believe it was middle school, they did a swim test. And because he was a bigger kid, everybody's like, yeah, right. But he finished before everybody else. And he was able to swim so well. And we laugh about it now. But he never, you know, pursued it as a profession. But he's a great swimmer, and he enjoys it. You know, but had he not pushed through those first few crying times, he would not have had that experience of being on a swim team and competing and experiencing that. But we do. We have to push past that often, that first time, and that even sometimes the second time, to see, you know, okay, how do we, you know, how does this help us grow? What do we learn from it? We get these labels that can be attached to us, you know, from those past experience and things that we go through. But, you know, how do these labels really impact people, their perception, identity, and their goals?
I mean, the labeling that is used in personality tests, as weird as this sounds, comes from essentially, it's a more socially acceptable way of essentially being racist. I mean, it literally comes from the same philosophy, where you put people into a category and assume they're all the same way, that if you're a D on the disc, you're exact, you know, like, I mean, interestingly, like, from a leadership perspective, like, all of the leadership theories that, like, you can actually look at how the theories of leadership changed over the last 100 years, but 100 years ago, it like a core theory in leadership was called the great man theory of leadership. Obviously, it was assumed that the only people that could be leaders were men. They had to be white. They had to be tall. You know, like, it was very characteristic.
Yes.
You know, and then the theories evolved where it was the trait-based theories of leadership. Well, now maybe, you know, like, maybe there's certain traits that we must discover. Like, it's fun to, like, watch how these things evolve. But baby boomers, just as a population, grew up in a culture where traits were heavily focused on. And so, like,
yes,
a lot of the, you know, it's there's still a lot of racism in the world through all generations, but, you know, a lot of those philosophies are hard to drop off of when it comes to the baby boomer generation, just because that was so ingrained when they were young and just the culture they grew up in. But just in general, labels, your son, you know, like, had you defined him by that one instance when he didn't like swimming, like, he could have easily been defined by that one experience, and you could have assumed that that's just who he is and always will be. And with labels in general, so Ellen Langer, she's a psychologist at Harvard. She's been studying mindfulness for the last 40 or so years, and maybe even longer. And mindfulness is obviously really important. It's awareness of yourself. It's awareness of your surroundings. It's awareness of other people. And one of the things that leads people to being mindless, where they're not aware, is labels. Like, if you've overly assumed a label about yourself, then you become mindless to your own behavior. You actually think you're one way when actually you're not. Like, so, like, for example, people who think that they're depressed always think they're depressed. People who think they're introverts think they're always introverts. When it's just not actually accurate of their behavior or of their emotions or their situation. But labels create tunnel vision. They also become a part of your identity, where you then believe that it's who you are and who you'll always be, and that stunts your imagination for creating a future version of yourself that has skills and abilities that you want. It stops you from actually going outside your comfort zone, and it allows you to justify your behavior versus creating a future self of the person you genuinely want to be and having the courage, you know, the courage to go through the learning process, dealing with uncertainty, not knowing all the answers, you know, pursuing stuff that allows you to build confidence. So labels really stunt confidence, and they stop you from growing. They lead you to being predictable.
Yeah, you think the impact that we're in a society where people, we've got social media, and people are heavily influenced by what other people think, and that keeps them trapped in the perception of themselves. How does someone get past that?
Well, I mean, it's important to take your current identity a little less seriously. Like, your current identity doesn't really matter that much. As weird as that sounds, your future self matters so much more. There's a really good book called It's Not How Good You Are, It's How Good You Want to Be. There's a lot of research from Carol Dweck. She's the one who created the idea of fixed mindset versus growth mindset. And one of the things that she did when she studied a lot of, like, you know, young students, and she would give them like tests or challenges that were way above their skills, you know, like, just to see how they would handle the stress. And the kids with the fixed mindset, the meaning that they gave to experiencing difficulty was, I'm not smart or I'm dumb. And they would define themselves based on the single score that they got. So they would, all of the kids failed the test, you know, but, like, she saw what the kids would think about the score. And so,
yeah,
like, the kids, you know, like, the kids with the fixed mindset who got a bad score, they said, you know, I'm dumb. Like, they were defined by the present. Whereas those with the growth mindset, they'd get a score back and they would say, you know, not yet. Like, I'm not there yet. And so Carol Dweck calls it the power of yet, which allows you to be, you know, to escape from the tyranny of now. She calls it the tyranny of now. But basically, I think it's just important to realize that right now who you are is a snapshot, but it also just, it doesn't matter that much. It's not something you should overly define. We already talked about it earlier, but, like, you're not the same person you were 10 years ago. It's really good for, like, you know, your mental well-being to not see yourself as the same person you were in the past. You're not the same person. You've got a different perspective. You've got different goals. You wouldn't make the same decisions. That's called growing and maturing. But the same is true of your future self. your future self is going to be a different person than you are. They're going to make different decisions. They're going to have different preferences, different priorities, different values to some degree, hopefully better ones. Hopefully they can make better decisions if they've gone through some learning that you haven't gone through yet. You know, just as one example, I wrote a book 3 years ago called Willpower Doesn't Work, and love the book, but I wouldn't write that same book today. I have different perspectives than I had back then. But my future self probably might disagree with some of the stuff that I'm talking about right now. And that's totally fine because my current self isn't the be-all, end-all. And so you just need to hold your current identity a little bit more loosely. And actually what you want to do is you want to take the time to think about who you genuinely want to be in the future and clarify your future self. There's a lot of research that says that the number one regret that people have on their deathbed is that they did not have the courage to be the person they wanted to be. Instead, they lived up to the expectations of those around them. And so it's incumbent upon everyone listening to think about, you know, you could grab your journal and whatnot, give yourself some space, but think about who's the person you genuinely want to be in like 2 to 3 years from now. You know, what do you want to be doing? Like, what do you want your relationships to be like? What do you want your day-to-day life to be like? How do you want things to be different? And then rather than defining yourself, because your identity is based on how you define and describe yourself. Rather than defining yourself based on who you are or who you've been, you want to start telling people the story of who you want to be, where you want to go. That actually allows you to believe it more. When you start telling people about your goals, which does take courage, it makes you a little bit more vulnerable by being honest about what you genuinely want. There's actually a really good quote that says, all progress starts by telling the truth. But like... When you start telling people about your goals, not only do you start to believe it more, but other people start to encourage you. You also start to feel more accountable to acting consistent with your future self rather than being so consistent to your former self. There's obviously other things you could do to increase your commitment, like investing money into your future identity, eliminating aspects of your identity that support your former self. I mean, there's the goal is that your future is the thing predicting your behavior, not your past.
So you mentioned setting goals. When it comes to setting goals, most people set goals for all the key areas in their lives. Like they'll set a goal for relationships, finance, health, spirituality, career, business. They'll have like 7, 8, 9 different goals. Each area has its own. But you speak and write about having one single goal. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you're obviously someone who's been doing some reading. A lot of people don't get that far. That's pretty awesome. There's a really good book actually called The One Thing. But it's important for motivation to be focused. You know, like motivation, it's hard to be motivation. Like complexity kills motivation. Let's just say that. And so simplicity is really good for motivation. Simplicity is really good for hope as well. You know, and hope is actually really important for your future. You got to have hope. Hope actually allows you to have motivation. And so setting a single goal, and obviously we do have various goals. I mean, I've got goals in other areas of my life, but it's good to build a single goal that allows you, I call it a keystone goal. It's the goal that allows you, everything else to fall into place. Usually it could be some form of experience or like numerical situation, you know, finances are a big one. But when you clarify your future self, you kind of want to think, what is the outcome that if it were true would make my future self possible? So for me, as an example, 5 years ago when I was a first year PhD student, I really wanted to be an author. I wanted to be someone who was writing professional books. I wanted to be with one of the big publishers. I wanted to be making 6 figures or more because I had 5 or 3 foster kids. I wanted to have the flexibility of schedule. Those were attributes of my future self that I was imagining that I did not have. And so I then had to think, well, what outcome would actually make this possible? And so that's where you start doing research, you know, like how do you actually become a professional author? How do you make money as a writer? Like these were just questions that I was having. And ultimately the goal that I set, the outcome that I believed would make all of my other, you know, wishes true, you could say, was that I could just get a 6-figure book deal. Like that's an outcome, that's tangible. And so then you can reverse engineer that goal, you know, and find a process. The process is always based on the goal. You can't actually understand someone's process without knowing what their goal is. And so, you know, once I decided I wanted to get a six-figure book deal. I could figure out how to reach millions of people with my blogs because it became required to achieve my goal, to become my future self. I didn't just set out to reach millions of people with a blog because I wanted to do that. I learned how to do that so that I could actually get what I wanted, which was to become a professional author so I could provide for my family. And so I could, and so, you know, you want to think about what's a clear outcome. What's an outcome that if it were true would allow all of the other things in your life to be possible. You know, so like the goals that I pursue now are different from what I was pursuing in the past. And so I'm pursuing different outcomes, and you want to be really thoughtful about what's the thing you're pursuing. Because actually, your identity comes from your goals. And so whatever thing you're pursuing, that's the thing that's defining you right now. And sometimes you may want to question the thing you're pursuing, and maybe you could pursue something different.
You know, a lot of people will do the opposite. Well, they'll put the process first, you know, before the goal. They know what
the process is.
Unfortunately, I see a lot of coaches do that because that's a lot of what they lead with. They, you know, when we're being trained to be coaches and we're working with a business coach or something, well, what is your process? And, if you know, from my perspective, the process isn't the same for everybody. You know, that's part of what makes our goal, right? Yes. Yes, we have to have, and we have to figure that out, and a coach can help you with that, but it shouldn't, I don't know if you experienced this when I started my business. I had someone tell me I had to do it exactly the way they did it or I was going to fail. And I fortunately laughed that off, but, you know, their way was not my way. But I was like, did he really just say this to me? I'm going to fail if I don't do it exactly the way he's telling me. But unfortunately, you see a lot of that, you know. Oh, no, go ahead. I was finishing.
I was going to say, you also see a lot of that in the writing world or the creative world, you know, because people obsess so much on process that they think that the process is the goal, and it's not. The process is only as good as it actually achieves the goal. So, like in psychology, so Malcolm Gladwell popularized the idea that if you do something for 10,000 hours, you're going to be amazing at it.
Right.
That idea actually came from research on what's called deliberate practice, which, you know, there is no 10,000 hour rule. If you can do something for 10,000 hours and actually not get any good at it. You can do something for 10,000 hours and get no better at it. Deliberate practice on the opposite end doesn't mean you do something just routinely. Routine can almost is often to the detriment of growth. What deliberate practice is, you can have routines. I'm not saying you shouldn't have routines, but doing something routinely doesn't mean you're actually getting better at it.
Right.
You know, we all have routines. You know, I could have a routine of eating a bag of chips every time I go home. and so, you know what I mean? But deliberate practice means it's true learning. And it's usually with the help of a coach, but you always have a clear future self in mind. It's a process that's shaped towards a very specific outcome. That's why it's called deliberate. It's a process that's very targeted towards a specific outcome, and the person engaging through it has to visualize and see their future self with those attributes or characteristics. And they're then going through the process of going from who they are to who they want to be, which is not easy. You know, it means that you're pushing the comfort zone, pushing your skill level, resting, recovering, getting good feedback, getting coaching, learning from experts. Like, it means you're actually going through deep learning, which is not easy. But in order to actually go through that learning, you have to have a clear future self. And then ultimately you have to shape the process that will get you there. Because my goals are not the same as your goals. Therefore, my process won't be the same as your process. Although I can still learn some from you, I can't actually purely replicate you if I want to get to where I want to go.
No. You know, and I think part of this concept, when you think about relationships and people, I remember I was talking to someone and they were married for several years and they said they're not the same person that I married. Yeah, they're not. But they expect that person to stay the same. Like, what happened to that person I knew in college and high school? Well, life. You know, I mean, why how can people avoid getting in that stuck? I mean, you see so many people who end up getting divorced or leaving relationships because of that. You know, how do they avoid that?
Yeah, I actually talk in the book about don't get married purely for personality. You know, obviously you need to like the person. They've got to be interesting to you, but often the things that you love the most about someone can be the things that annoy you the most, like when you've been with them long enough. You know, the novelty wears off, right? And so in my opinion, it's all about purpose, right? You have to have a shared vision, a shared, you know, shared goals. I mean, even Viktor Frankl, who wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning, who survived the Holocaust, you know, like one of the things that he talked about in Man's Search for Meaning is that the people who lost the sense of hope and purpose for their future, they stopped being able to handle the present. They had no meaning in their suffering, and so they died in the concentration camps. Like, you have to have a meaning and a future for your purpose. And so in my opinion, you want to get married to someone who you can create a shared vision with, a shared purpose, and that purpose is going to transform you both. You know, and you're both going to become different people, but the purpose keeps you aligned. You can change, but you can still be aligned. And, you know, my wife and I, like, we are, you know, she had to take a leap of faith, obviously, because the personality test called me a white. And I also did have big dreams. You know, that maybe that's why I scored as a white, is because I was a dreamer, but I'm not just like an aloof, you know. It's like she had to take some leaps of faith because I was pursuing some big goals, but we were very aligned. Like on the type of life we wanted to create together. We both wanted to have kids, you know? So like when she said, you know, which I didn't know before we got married, when she said, hey, I really want to do foster care. I was like, well, you know, that's not exactly what I was thinking, but that fits with our vision of having kids. And like, I'm going to be flexible to that because the vision's what matters, not the process. Right. And so, and so, like, yeah, we then, you know, you can be flexible in process when you're shared on vision. And and so, yeah, then we, you know, having a purpose that drives your personality is a lot better than having a personality that drives your purpose. You know, like, if, you know, like,
yes.
So, like, our purpose is the thing driving us to be the people we are. And we're both transforming in you know, in ways that we wanted and also in ways, you know, that like maybe we weren't sure of. Like maybe I wasn't sure that I would be writing these types of books, but, you know, I'm still trying to be the dad and husband and father, you know, like that we both were on the same page of when we got married. And so the purpose should be the thing driving who you are and who you're becoming, not just getting married because you think someone's funny.
One thing you just said that really resonated, and I hope it's resonating with a lot of people, was people get so stuck in the process that it's so rigid and it has to be a certain way that you didn't have you had the flexibility, you wanted children, but, you know, the process didn't have to be a set way. You know, you have the foster children as well as the children, your biological children that you had. But you were flexible with the process, and too many people are so stuck and rigid in that. They don't allow for that flexibility because they've lost sight, you know, that the future and what the goal is.
Yep. That's why I think things like morning routines, daily journaling, just consistent check-ins. I mean, it's like an airplane, you know, like airplanes get pushed off course all throughout a plane, right? All throughout a flight. I mean, what they say is that planes spend, you know, 90% of the flight off course to some degree because there's pressure and wind and stuff, but they have the guidance system that's always pulling them back. Like they're always course correct, so they are actually always like getting right back on course and they get where they want to go. And if you don't have processes or things like that to like check in, I mean, for me, I write my journal every single morning thinking about my future self. You know, we have, you know, and like even just like little things like weekly family council meeting or just, you know, just getting together. Like, you know what I mean? Like things that actually keep you on the same page, keep you connected to the same goals, keep you interested in each other. I mean, it can be easy to disconnect from each other, from your kids or from your spouse. If like, you're not actually like talking about your goals, talking about your purpose. You're just getting caught in the mundane, you know, and just distracting yourself from reality. Of course you're off course.
Yeah, so I know we've been talking a lot about the personality and identity. And so what are some of the most effective and science-based ways for making these changes in your life?
It has a lot to do with the past and the future. One is letting, obviously, like letting go of the meanings you've given to the past. The past, it's important for people to realize the past is not objective. That's a really healthy place to get in your life when you realize that your view of the past is just a view. It's not actually the truth. There's a good quote from Stephen Covey. He said, "We see the world not as it is, but as we are." You know, so like when I was 11 years old, my parents got divorced. My father became an extreme drug addict. Like, the experience that I had as an 11-year-old and the meanings that I gave to my life and to myself and even to my dad should probably not be the same meanings that I give as a 32-year-old, right? Like, and especially someone who keeps learning, knows a lot about psychology, you know, like you probably, and so one important thing is choosing better meanings to the former experiences that may be plaguing you. You know, when you go through something hard, you can be shaped in terrible ways by the meanings you've given to those experiences. Someone tells you you're ugly, you believe it, you know, like it lowers your self-esteem. Like, you don't have to actually agree with that. That's not the meaning you had to give to that, you know. So, like, choosing to reframe the experiences, and often that takes journaling. That's not easy work. It takes a lot of courage. But, you know, journaling about former experiences, choosing to look at it from different perspectives, you know, therapy is obviously a good one. But, like, you can go and talk to people. But the goal is that you know, if you think about and if you talk about your experiences, they become far more manageable. They become things that you realize you can handle. If you keep it inside of you, you can't see it, you can't manage it, you're still being managed by it. And so, you know, basically just confronting the past and choosing to let go of your current version and story of it so that you can be empowered to have a better future. It's actually good to view the past as everything happened for you, not to you. You know, even the worst experiences can be viewed as they happen for you if you choose to learn from them so that you can have a better future rather than choose to be defined by them so that you're stuck in the present. So just choosing a better future, which is a better path, which is a lot of work, but it's something you've got control of. You can be the narrator of your past. You can actually change your memory. You can actually have a past that you're happy about, no matter what it was. You can have a past that has better meanings. Then obviously what you need to do is ultimately define your future self. You can't make high-quality decisions in the present if you don't know who you want to be in the future. Because if you don't know who you want to be in the future, it really doesn't matter what you do in the present. You could sit and eat donuts all day and stuff. Like, you have, there's no guidance for your decisions. Hal Hirschfeld at UCLA, actually, he's a psychologist who studied the idea of future self and how that impacts decision-making. You know, he says it's better to make decisions, you know, like, you'll make better decisions if you think about your future self as a different person. And have different preferences. You know, sometimes your current preferences don't matter that much. You know, if your preference is to, you know, like, again, just eat donuts and whatnot, like, that may not be good for your future self. You know, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying your current preferences often aren't the best thing for you. Sometimes, as an example, I get home from work and my preference is to just sit on the couch and numb out, but my kids want to play. You know, like, so realizing your future self as a different person and then making decisions based on what they would prefer, you know, starting to live consciously on a daily basis towards your future self. Like, what would your future self do today? How would your future self want to remember this? And then beginning to narrate, you know, telling people about your future self. Narrative is a huge aspect of your identity. And if you start telling people about your future self, that's going to be huge for you. You're going to believe it more. You're going to want to do it more. You're going to feel more accountable to it. Another big thing is investing money into your future identity. You know, like, at some point I had to start spending money on my writing career. That was how I started to develop commitment to that. Investment leads to commitment. And so when you start investing money into your future self, you start becoming more committed to it, more compelled to move forward. They call that, you know, sunk cost bias, but also endowment effect in psychology. You really value what you invest yourself in. I mean, those are some big ones. I mean, I would give one more, and that's environment, which is basically that you would need, if you're serious about moving in that direction, you should probably remove the influences that are really keeping you stuck. You know, like, that could be information you're consuming that maybe is, you know, continuing to keep you the person you are. It could be people. It could be places. But you want to remove the external influences that are supporting your current self to the demise of who you really want to become. And you need to create an environment that supports the person you're striving to become.
And for me, environment is like one of the biggest ones in it, because I will talk about it and people don't fully understand. Like I was in the military for 24 years, so I've got all this stuff that I've never had a chance to go through some boxes and different things, and that drains on me. And it's like what I'm surrounded with, you know, visually that blocks me being able to be as creative as I want to be. And so I try to explain that, and people are like, yeah, we'll just put this stuff here. I'm like, doesn't work that way, because your environment does influence you. The people you're with, what you're putting into your mind, everything.
My whole book, Willpower Doesn't Work, is about environment. It's huge. I mean, your environment shapes you far more than you think it does.
Mm-hmm. Man. And we've had a chance here to kind of explain a lot about personality not being permanent, but you know, what made you write this book?
So I started thinking a lot about it in 2018. So Willpower Doesn't Work came out in 2018. A big part of Willpower Doesn't Work is addiction. You know, my younger brother has struggled with addiction. My dad has. And obviously, willpower has got to be probably the worst way to overcome an addiction. Trying to do it by yourself. Like, actually, the way out of an addiction is to stop trying it through willpower and to finally, like, relinquish control and ask for help and start getting people to support you beyond yourself. So I wrote it because that book, Willpower Doesn't Work, because I wanted to help my brother realize that you've got all the potential in the world. You've got all the best intentions, but you're still in that same environment, right? And so you're never going to get out of it until you change your environment. There was a lot more to that book than just that. But one of the things that led me to study was trauma, because trauma is obviously a big aspect of addiction. Unresolved trauma leads to unhealthy coping mechanisms. So I read the book, The Body Keeps the Score. And that book is a huge book. It's probably the definitive book on trauma. But what I was surprised by when I read that book is how much it talks about personality and about how trauma shapes personality, you know, and about how people who don't resolve their trauma, their personality gets frozen in the past and they stop emotionally developing. They become emotionally rigid. Their hope and their imagination and their flexibility shatter, and they're just defined in one way. And that really reminded me of the quote that you actually said earlier, which is the best way to predict a person's future behavior is by looking at the past. Because obviously I'd heard that many times in psychology. And so reading that book helped me realize that one of the reasons for that is someone hasn't resolved their past and they're still being defined by it. Therefore, they're acting repetitiously towards their past. And so that book opened the can of worms for me to write the book that explains one, you know, why the past is so predictive of the future and why it doesn't have to be, and how you can live your life the opposite way, where your future can be the thing predicting your personality rather than your past. And so that's kind of the reason I went down that path.
Well, now, the book, Personality Isn't Permanent, is scheduled to be released in June. But if our listeners pre-order the book, you have some amazing bonuses. Can you share how people can find the book and what some of those bonuses are?
Sure, and thank you just for letting me be on your show and for this amazing conversation. It's been fun. I hope it's been all right for you as well.
Oh, it's been great. It's been great.
Awesome. That's cool. So obviously you can get the book anywhere, and you can pre-order the book now. You can order it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can order the audio book. You can order the Kindle book, whatever you want. Buy the book wherever you want. But if you go to my website, which is BenjaminHardy.com, you can – if you plug in your order information number, which is just your receipt number, into my website right on the front page, we will give you 3 free online courses. So in this book, there's 150 journal prompts, between 100 and 150 questions to help you reframe former experiences, to help you design your future self. So I've done an online course that takes you through the book, teaches you the concepts, takes you through the courses. There's also a journal mastery course, which over 10,000 people have gone through already. And it will just teach you how to use your journal to upgrade your subconscious, to let go of the past, to move forward. And finally, for anyone who's interested in blogging or writing, obviously my blogs have done pretty well. A couple of years ago, I did a full day training at Genius Network. And Genius Network is a mastermind group for entrepreneurs. There was a full day training I did, which people paid like $3,000 to be there. And the whole thing was recorded. And I break down all my blogging strategies, how to write effectively, how to get your articles on big publications. I even give away my book proposal for Willpower Doesn't Work, which Ryan Holiday helped me with. And that course we've sold for thousands of dollars. But all of these things we're giving away for free, just if people go spend the $13 or $17 to buy Personalities and Permanence. So check out BenjaminHardy.com. You can learn how you can get all of these, training and resources for free, which as someone who believes in investing in yourself, like a $17 purchase, it's worth your future self, if any of this thing is relevant to you. So go check out BenjaminHardy.com.
For me, I would just to be able to get that, the blogging course, when I saw, whoa, wait a minute, he's giving this away, and knowing what you accomplished, it's like $17, yeah, okay. Because you can't get a course like this, especially you talked about the journal mastery, where there are people who don't know how to keep a journal, which, has been a tool that you've used to be able to help you define your future self. So I encourage, if you're, listeners, go ahead and get the book, pre-order it, put that number in, the code in, and be able to get these resources that are worth, several thousand dollars. I definitely encourage you to do that. I myself want to get the blogging course, so I've got to enter mine in.
Do it.
Before we
end. Yeah, you'll like it. You'll learn a lot.
Oh, man. Because I blog, and I'm like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, I know you do. It's awesome.
Before we end the show, and I'm going to give it to you, the 30 seconds to share a final message with everyone about their future self, what would that message be?
Your future self is a choice. It's not something you discover. You're the one who decides who you want to be in the future, and that's really your choice. And you don't have to be defined by the past. When you've decided who you want to be and when you begin to have the courage to start telling people, then you can start being consistent with your future self. You can start to move forward consciously. You don't have to live on autopilot. And your future self or your purpose should really be the thing predicting who you are. Your purpose should be the thing shaping your personality, rather than having your personality shape a purpose that may be limited based on how you currently see yourself. And your current self really isn't the thing you should heavily weigh too much on. It's not how good you are, it's how good you want to be. And that's really how you build confidence, is by choosing who you want to be and making progress in that direction. That expands your confidence, it expands what you're, when you have new experiences and things like that, it allows you to keep moving forward. And that's when life becomes interesting and exciting. And you kind of have to have that. If you don't have a sense of purpose for your life, then the present's going to be meaningless and you're going to be distracted, or it's just going to seem like suffering. So you really actually need it to have a sense of purpose and direction in your life today. And I would just encourage you to do it. I'll end with a quote from Dan Sullivan. He says, the way you make your present better is by making your future bigger. When your future is bigger, your present gets better, because now you're living with purpose. Doesn't mean your present is easier, but it's way better.
I love that. And I want to say to anyone who's listening out there, and I know there's somebody who needed to hear this today, whenever you're listening to it, you get to write your story. And so I encourage you to get the book, and it will help and guide you along the process and get those limiting beliefs and everything that's been blocking you, push that away, and be able to create this future for yourself. Now, I know Dr. Hardy has a new book coming out in October, and he will be joining us again to talk about that prior to the release of the book. Hint, hint, if you took that hint there. But while everyone's waiting, I encourage you to read Personality Isn't Permanent, again, releasing in June. I think it definitely will be a bestseller, and it rates in one of my top 10 books I've ever read. I think it's an awesome book. And if you have any questions or, go ahead, I encourage you, email me. Maybe we can do some kind of live video Q&A. So you can reach out to me, cowens@infinitycoaching.com. www.thebrainfuel.net. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I think this was an awesome, powerful show, and I do thank you so much for sharing with us today.
My absolute pleasure, and excited to come back and talk about the next one, and hopefully we can stay in touch. You're incredible. What a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Next time on our show, we're going to be discussing if coaching is right for you. And we'll be so if you're subscribed, you're going to get notified when that show airs. So definitely be looking for this. I want to thank you, you know, all our listeners, the ones who've been with us, you know, for a long time and the new ones that are joining us today. I thank you for another exciting episode of Let's Coach with Carolyn. Again, you can find me by going to CarolynOwens360.com, and you're going to see me putting the links to where you can get the pre-order the book and get the bonuses and everything on my social media. So, guys, stay tuned and be looking for that. And, again, remember, you get to write your own story. And as I always say, it's about success on your own terms. Have an awesome, blessed week, everybody. And thank you so much for being with us. Bye-bye.